Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, John DiGirolamo, is a critically acclaimed author, speaker, and anti-human trafficking advocate. His latest book, It's Not About the Predator, A Parent's Guide to Internet and Social Media Safety, is a practical 30-page booklet to keep kids safe online. John has graciously offered today to discuss this sensitive but crucial topic, so I caution listeners to be aware that young children should not listen without parental guidance. Good morning, John. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
John, it's a pleasure to have you, even though sadly this topic is not a fun topic to talk about. It's a topic that has plagued our nation, our young people, for a very long time now, and I appreciate your willingness to come on the show and discuss it openly. First of all, to start us off, are you able to share some statistics to make listeners more aware of the magnitude of this problem that we are dealing with teen solicitation online and other issues that surround that?
Sure. So one of the things that every parent needs to know is that the average teenager spends about 9 hours every day online. And according to staysafe.org, there's 750,000 predators online at any given time. Also, by the time someone graduates high school, 90% of those students have either sent or received some kind of explicit picture. So it's really something that every parent needs to be thinking about, worrying about. And the question is, you know, why are these predators out there? What do they want? And they really are looking to either get more explicit content, they are looking to extort somebody for money, or they want to meet with them to engage in some kind of inappropriate behavior. So it's definitely something that's pervasive that everyone needs to kind of arm themselves with the knowledge, and then also some tips we can talk about later about what they can do to prevent this.
Would you mind to share with us, what is your background in this field? What kind of experience have you had? What is your education training that makes you knowledgeable about all of this?
Yeah, so I've been an author for a couple of years when I went into kind of semi-retirement. In my previous book, I wrote about human trafficking, and I started doing presentations and talks about human trafficking and all the perils associated with that. And what happened is, the more research I did, is the predator tactics of what they're trying to do, whether their goal is human trafficking or whether it's to extort somebody or just get, and I don't mean just, but it, you know, to get pictures from a complete stranger, those predator tactics are very similar. Those grooming signs are similar. And so it kind of led me to put this booklet together for parents so they can be aware of what's going on. Most of the times when I talk in front of parent groups, they don't realize half the things that are in this book. And it's only a 30-something book, so we're not talking about a lot of content. It's just very summarized, bullet point, and straight to the point type of information. Many parents just don't realize what's going on out there.
Yeah, and if I could offer a pitch to listeners for your book, John, I ordered the one about predators, and I read it in probably 20 minutes. And I'm certainly not detracting from it in any way. What I'm telling parents and listeners at this point is that this book is one that is a very effective resource for people to find out the facts of what is really going on here in the real world with our kids. I thought it was very well presented, because like you said, you put those bullet points in there. Here's the danger. This is why. Here's what you can do. This is why. Here's what you can't do. This is why. And I just wanted to pitch for listeners your book, and I would recommend that anyone who does have a young person, a teen in their home, purchase that book as a resource. So it's not a book that's going to take you 5 days to read. You know, you can sit down and read it in a half hour easily. And some of those points are points that you can discuss with your child as well. It makes a person wonder, John. We see this all the time, warnings for teens. I don't have a teen in my home anymore. I think I'm grateful for that at this point. But teens are constantly warned about online predators and don't talk to strangers and don't do this and don't do that. So why do you think there are still so many victims of teen exploitation out there?
Yeah, so part of that is the way that the modern teen brain works. It's like no other in any generation because of the technology that we have. So a modern teenager looks at having thousands of online friends as a goal instead of a problem. Because I can guarantee that if you have 1,000 friends, you are probably including some predators on there that you really don't know. And so this is, you know, this is kind of what they're thinking. They want that affirmation of how many people liked my Snapchat story or who's following me, et cetera. And the way that the teenagers are going to react is they will simply click OK when people say, hey, can I follow you? Do you want to be my friend, et cetera? They are really looking for that kind of relationship online. They view online friends as real friends, where people like myself from another generation don't see it that way.
I can certainly understand that. Young people, like you say, their mindset is so different from what we grew up with that they just don't have that sense of caution to be careful about who they're friending. So thank you for explaining that. Can you provide some examples, John, and I'm sure you can, of predator tactics to lure children and teens? What kinds of things do they say to these kids to even get them interested?
Yeah, it's all about paying attention to the teen, making them feel important. Many times what a predator will do is they will set up a fake profile to be of a similar age. It's very easy to set up a profile. You can download images of any type off the internet in a matter of seconds. And they're going to go where the kids are. They're going to go to Snapchat, TikTok, et cetera. And specifically what they're going to do is they're going to try to get them to go into a chat room or private messaging. That's where they can really kind of start having that one-on-one relationship. Many times they're going to try to, you know, stroke their ego, say things that that they have in common. Oh, you like soccer. I like soccer too, et cetera. There's also a financial piece. Many times they'll groom them by saying something like, I'll give you $10 for a picture of your feet. And that may seem very innocent, but what it does is it sets them up to get an electronic transaction where they can go get money to buy goods online, or they'll say something like, hey, if you send me this, I'll send you a gift on Amazon. Now, if they do that, by definition, if they've sent it to that teen's house, they know their address. And so they're going to kind of lure them into this, and you can imagine what they're going to be asking for if they're willing to pay $20, $40, $50. They're really trying to figure out what's that unmet need of that teen, and they're going to zoom right into that. The thing to keep in mind is it's so easy to send friend requests online. The predator will do this to hundreds of teens, and a some percent is going to react to that. That's where they're going to spend their time, on those that are reacting.
Would you share with us what is the percentage of responses that these predators get when they do send out hundreds of requests like that? Is it only maybe 10%, or is it quite a bit higher than that? Of course, I know the answer because I read the book. But if you would tell our listeners
Yes, it's a very high percentage. Typically, you know, that team, they want lots of friends and followers. So they're going to just mindlessly say, sure, yeah, why not? What's the big deal? What's the problem? So they're going to click through and say yes. And then, you know, the percent becomes smaller when you're talking about actually having conversations, continuing conversations. Some kids, you know, they've had that conversation with their parents. So if somebody asks for something inappropriate, they're going to, you know, block that person. But unfortunately, it's a very high percent that do, in fact, have a reaction to somebody that's paying attention to them.
And that goes back to making us wonder where we are as a society with our parenting skills anymore, John, doesn't it? That's what comes to mind for me anyway.
Yes. What's happened in the modern parenting generation is parents want to be the friend instead of the parent. And
yes.
Part of that, I think, is our modern culture. Part of it is when families divorce and you've got these splintered families, a lot of times it's more natural where a parent is going to be that friend. So kid doesn't have a different relationship, better relationship with the ex-spouse. That factors into it as well.
Well, I know that, sadly, sexting is not uncommon among young people today. It's more common than even I thought it was, I guess. I'm up there in my early 70s, so I'm way out of the loop with all this stuff. But from what I've been reading lately, it's a very common thing among high school students and even among junior high school students and sometimes even younger than that, which is absolutely frightening. So would you explain for our listeners how dangerous is it? What can parents do to even find out that their kids are doing it?
Yeah, it's really dangerous, and it does start in middle school. And what's happened is that practice has become normalized and can very easily lead to cyberbullying, which then can lead to depression, self-harm, even suicide. And I can give you one example that a lot of people think that they're only going after girls, and that is just not true. One of the tactics that a predator does to go after boys is they'll set up a fake profile of an attractive college-aged girl. She'll send pictures to this boy who is accepted, friend, following, etc. It may be done through a chat room or something like that. Typically, they've just downloaded a pornography picture. And then she will put pressure on him that says, hey, I showed you, now you have to show me. He many times will send a real picture, and then immediately they're going to go after him for money and try to get him extorted. They're counting on that teenager to be embarrassed, not want to talk to their parents, et cetera. And so they're now put in a predicament of either sending money, and unfortunately, a lot of times it spirals into that depression or self-harm type of situation. So it's really dangerous, even if it's somebody you know versus a complete stranger. Either way, it is, you know, those pictures live on the internet. They just don't go away, and they don't really get deleted.
And another sad thing is when you have a boyfriend-girlfriend situation where they feel like they trust each other. So they will share these pictures amongst what they think is themselves, and then a few months later they break up. And one of them uses that against the other, and that can be also extremely damaging to a person because they thought they could trust that person. And come to find out that, the relationship goes sour and the person is terribly extorted. So that's something else to look out for. So don't think, I'm talking to young people now, don't think that just because you're in a relationship that it's a safe practice, because it just isn't.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, unfortunately, and I've seen research where they ask teens, why do you send these pictures? And they will answer things like, well, that's kind of the new way to flirt. That is how they want to get kind of an adrenaline rush, do things on a dare. Face it, throughout history, teenagers have never made the most rational and logical decisions. And so many times they'll do this thinking it's not a big deal, or they're feeling very pressured. And then you're right, all of a sudden they break up, they have an argument, and the next thing you know, their picture's all over the place. There was a recent article where they were investigating nude pictures on 20 middle school age kids' phones. Why? Someone had sent a picture, thought it was going to just stay there, and something went wrong, and they sent it out, and that's now to 20 classmates. So even if you've had that conversation with your child, hey, don't send pictures, et cetera, well, they could be on this group chat. Now they've got pictures of an eighth grader on their phone, and by definition at that age, that's going to be child pornography that you live in.
Yeah, it's very scary because a person can innocently get caught up in this stuff, and after reading your book and other resources I've looked at, it almost sounds like we're fighting a tidal wave here. John, at what age do you believe a child should be allowed to create a social media account?
Yeah, I guarantee your teenager will tell you that if they don't have social media accounts, their life is over. I guarantee that's what they're going to say. And a parent just has to kind of resist that and limit that. And so, you know, the age is going to be dependent on how mature that child is. You know, I'll throw out an age like 16, but this assumes that the parent is checking that activity on a regular basis. They're checking who's in their friend group, who are they sending and receiving social media exchanges from. And you've got to have that open dialogue, and not just once, but you've got to have it on a regular basis. So you're explaining to your child what are the dangers. You're also talking about what are your values. And what are the do's and don'ts and why? And so you've got to kind of arm yourself with that, because it's not a one and done conversation. And I would absolutely have them install some kind of parental software that can help. It's not a complete fail safe, because kids are always one step ahead of the parents from a technology basis. But it's going to help kind of monitor things. And you're going to want to keep that teen limited on that phone. Don't let them go goof off with it till 2 a.m. every night. And not only will that affect their sleep, but, you know, everything your mother always said about bad things happen at 2 a.m, well, it's still true.
Parental controls are available for social media accounts, but just like you showed in your book, how can teens circumvent those controls, and what can parents do on that level?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's really easy. When I was a kid, if you wanted to be sneaky, you either had to ask your friends or be really creative. Today, all you have to do is ask Siri, Alexa, and YouTube. I suggest every parent who's listening here to go to YouTube and type in what to do if you have strict parents, and you will be shocked in a bad way about all of the little how-to, step-by-step ways to circumvent parental controls. There's kids on there that tell other teens what to do. And so it's just too easy for the kids to do that. And parents need to be aware of things called spoofer apps. You can get, for example, a calculator app, and it does real math equations. So you think that your kid's using that to do their math homework. Well, it actually also has hidden folders, ways to kind of keep secrets, et cetera. Even something like Snapchat, which has, it's a very popular program. It has this My Eyes Only. Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a way to keep things away from somebody who might be just casually reviewing their Snapchat account. They're going to do all kinds of things. They may change the Apple ID. They may change the time zone. So you think that you've put in a control that says at 10 p.m. that phone is no longer going to work? Well, not if they change the time zone to Hawaii, because now all of a sudden it's not 10 p.m. These are the kinds of things that are examples of how teens are going to circumvent parental control.
Wow. And like I say, I'm grateful I don't have teens anymore in my home, but to think of these parents that are raising these kids today, it is just absolutely frightening. And that's why I appreciate someone like you coming on the show today, John, and making people aware of what's really out there, because I'm sure there's a substantial percentage of parents that do not know. We'll take a break here, where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen, right here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is author, speaker, and anti-human trafficking advocate, John DeGirolamo. If you would like to listen to this episode again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is available on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That's spelled PattiSheene.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to archived episodes. Under each episode is a More Information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview with John. So talk to us about how pornography and our culture feeds into the sexting, extortion, human trafficking issue.
Sure. So what we've got, unfortunately, is that the average age of someone viewing pornography is around 10 years old. This is a very young age, and sometimes they'll stumble across it. Sometimes it'll be on purpose. And when it's viewed like that at a young age, it can really warp their sense of relationships. You know, they design these kinds of sites to try to get somebody to keep coming back. There are lots of accounts of teens being addicted to pornography as well as adults. And what that does is, when you're looking at it at a young age and you're seeing these explicit images, it starts to normalize that. So when you get to middle school, it doesn't seem all that odd when somebody asks for a picture, or you asking for a picture, because you've now seen and been exposed to these images for a long time, and it's something that you see on a regular basis. Unfortunately, a lot of the popular kid programs, TikTok, Snapchat, Kick, etc., a lot of their chat rooms have links right to pornography sites. And so it's really affecting their view of what should boys be doing, what should girls be doing, how should you view relationships. It certainly degrades the idea of marriage, and how, you know, kind of a biblical view of sexuality. It really blows that up. And so it's really dangerous, and that's the kind of conversations that each parent needs to talk to their kid. It's an awkward conversation, but it is something that's necessary. And again, you can also talk about how this is not, you know, it's not real intimacy, and explain, you know, the virtues of marriage, things like that. You know, the general culture affects it as well. You know, this we have a celebrity culture. If you ask the average teen today what they want to do, they want to be a internet influencer. And the only way you influence people is to get more and more views, clicks, likes. And the only way you do that is to do something more outrageous. And many times that's going to lead to kind of a downward spiral.
Well, it can even lead to criminal activity, actually. You know, and then you have people on the internet that come on with these totally crazy challenges that can literally take a person's life. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and that downward spiral just gets more and more intense.
Yeah, and the other piece to this is the internet's going to tell you it's safe to send pictures. It's safe to do this. It gives that teen a false sense of security. There's no such thing as a safe way to send, you know, a naked picture of yourself. There just isn't. Mm-hmm. But if you go on Google and you type in how to send safe pictures of yourself, there's all these articles that are going to tell you, and they're going to be from, you know, 17 magazine or other media publications directed at that age group. And so yes, they're giving them this false sense of security, and there's definitely the peer pressure to do that from, you know, from other students, et cetera. And they just think that, oh, it's going to disappear or someone's not going to share it. And these things have a way of getting out there. It's never going to have a good ending.
Well, in the face of all these cultural influences and all these things that are going on, share tips on how parents can protect their child. What can we do here, John? It just seems like such a monumental problem for parents to tackle today.
Yeah, it is a big issue, but there are things that every parent can do. But it is going to take, you know, that dedication and involvement of the parents, and it's going to start with that. The parent needs to approve any programs, applications, games, et cetera, that are added to that kid's smartphone. And there are programs, they're listed in my book, that will essentially be a gatekeeper. If you see an app that doesn't make sense or you find is inappropriate, then you don't allow it. You as the parent need to have all the passwords, be the gatekeeper, put all these privacy settings to be enabled. And, you know, you're paying for the phone, so this is where you have to be the parent and not the friend and say, no, you're not getting this app or you're not getting that program or you're only allowed to be on social media 1 hour a day, something like that. You know, certainly you don't want to have your kid disclose their full name, their et cetera, and definitely the parent needs to be checking those chat rooms and private messages all the time. I recommend on a weekly basis they need to be checking this. And also, if your teen knows that you're checking on a random basis all the time, they're probably going to be a little more wary, hopefully, of doing, you know, anything that you wouldn't approve of.
Another thing, though, is just like if you put limits on your kids watching certain TV shows or playing certain video games, they go to a friend's house and you don't know what those parents have set for limits. So it's just really difficult. And I think we all need to handle it on an individual basis as to how well we know our kid and that sort of thing, you know, but it's really a very difficult subject to tackle. And I want to thank you and people like you, John, who are in the business of making the world aware of what's going on out there, because it's definitely something that needs to be brought to the attention of every single parent and grandparent and caregiver.
There's a couple of things that every parent needs to be thinking about. If they see some kind of change, dramatic change in their kid's behavior, if they are, you know, not wanting to give any access to their phone or their laptop, if they've got secret online friends, those are all, to me, red flags. The two biggest red flags are if all of a sudden they have a second cell phone or they get unexplained gifts. So if an Amazon package shows up at your house that you didn't order, start asking questions. Now, it doesn't mean that they might be, because you can be sexually abused without ever physically having contact, sending pictures, yes, things like that. That's all completely illegal, and that's, you know, that is a form of abuse, even though there may not have been a physical contact. So it can mean other things. You know, it could mean they're with the wrong crowd, maybe they're drinking or experimenting with drugs, behavior issues. It could be anything, but it also could mean that maybe they've got themselves in trouble, they're over their head, and now they're feeling depressed or they're lashing out or something. That's when you're going to want to really try to uncover what's the underlying reason for this behavior change and find out what it is so you can deal with it, support your kid, and tell them that, you know, you're in this together. It might be embarrassing, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. You do want to get through this as a family. It is definitely a scary world. You know, one of the newer things that's out there are instead of smartphones, they have dumb phones. And you see a lot of sort of elementary, early middle school kids have these. It doesn't have internet access, but you can't send pictures, et cetera. But you can send a text to say, you know, hey, Mom, I'm done with practice. I need a ride home, et cetera, to make those kind of basic communications. Definitely that's something that parents can also look into. And that's pretty good for, you know, kind of that 8 to 12-year-old age group.
Thank you so much for sharing that. John, you have a story about a police officer who set up a profile as a 12-year-old. Tell us what the final outcome was of that story.
Yeah, so I interviewed David Gomez, who was a school resource officer in the Boise metro area, in both middle school and high school. He created this online profile. He received random requests to be friends very quickly within the first 24 hours. These predators immediately went into private messaging. Within just a few minutes, this profile was asked for explicit pictures and then was asked within 12 hours to go out on a date with a predator. Officer Gomez is typing back, you know, as this young girl, well, how do I go out on a date? I don't drive. I'm only 12. Do I ride my bike, etc.? It was very, very clear that this person was very much underage. This person had made requests for sexual favors and et cetera, and they were going to meet at a motel. And, of course, Officer Gomez and team came there and promptly arrested this guy. He had sent out over 100 middle school friend requests. 90% of them had accepted without question. 20 had sent nude photographs to this guy when they looked at his electronic devices. Two had a previous encounter at a motel. Now, true story, this person, who they arrested on a Friday afternoon, missed his dinner date. And what was that dinner date? It was the rehearsal dinner because he was getting married the next day.
Oh, my goodness, John. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And he was marrying somebody who had a kid from a previous marriage, and his fiance had a 13-year-old daughter in the house. That's who he was about to marry and was arrested the day before the wedding. True story. I mean, you know, I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. And unfortunately, that's not all that unusual. So they did a sting operation for the summer, and they found over a dozen of these predators out there in just the Boise metro area. You know, and that's kind of middle America. It's a real city, but, you know, it's not Los Angeles or New York City or something like that. This is kind of regular America, and yet this is happening right under everyone's nose.
And that's something I had meant to bring up at the beginning of the show, John, is that this does not necessarily happen only in a city. It happens in communities of 500 as well. Maybe not as prevalent, but it does happen. Don't think that just because you live in a nice little small country town somewhere in the Midwestern states or out here in a place like Colorado, our towns are fairly well not really highly populated, but boy, that doesn't mean that, because it is an online thing. So that doesn't mean that these kids are not being reached just as aggressively as kids in metropolitan areas. Again, I would like to encourage parents to look at not only the book about predators, but you have 3 or 4 books out there that are along the same line, and I believe they can all be obtained from Amazon, can they not, John?
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, the book on human trafficking talks about how some of the kids were lured online for what I consider the one of the most evil things somebody can do to someone else. Yes, that's not as common, but it's still something that's out there. And those stories are all set in middle America, suburban, small town, Colorado, like any other town or many in America. And I encourage parents to kind of read that to just kind of see how these predators operate. It's in a story format, so it's not bullet points. It's a story with dialogue, action, thoughts, emotion, et cetera. And you really get a sense of kind of how these predators operate. And I think that with the booklet really kind of helps arm parents on what they can do. They got to play offense and defense.
And of course, another big thing that we can all do for our kids today is pray for them. And they sure need our prayers. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely family prayers that can be said, and again, kind of teaching some of those biblical values can hopefully reinforce and help the parents have those discussions with their kids.
Most definitely. Okay, John. Well, thank you so much for your time, and may God continue to bless you in what you're doing to make people aware of this evil and what's going on here, and doing your best to protect our children and empowering parents to be able to do that for their kids as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. We covered a lot of areas, and I really appreciate the time to talk to you and your audience.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled pattisheene.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheene. Until next time, God bless you.